Well, welcome once again to season four of My Life in Football, and really pleased to say a good friend. And well, I suppose the only way you could describe this gentleman is the David Ornstein of non-league football. I think that's the best way to describe you, Ollie. Of course, Mr. Ollie Bayliss, and it's great to have you with us, mate.
I don't know about that, mate, but yeah, pleasure to be on. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Ollie, always start these conversations with, how are you doing at the present minute in time before we go back to how it all first started for you. But so I suppose that question is that, how are you and how's everything going at the minute?
Yeah, all good, all good. Got a baby on the way in a couple of months, so life feels busy at the moment, and it's about to get a lot busier. Yeah, so that's the big thing in my life at the moment. A lot of getting ready for that, working out, yeah, what the heck I'm doing, how to do all of that. That's our first one, so yeah, very, very excited about that. Yeah, and professionally, yeah, enjoying the world of non-league football as ever, and producing radio shows as well at BBC Three Counties.
And of course, I was just going to say, I just reading your bio, this senior content producer and non-league show presenter of BBC Three Counties Radio. That's a bio and a half, isn't it?
Oh, it's good fun. Basically, I get to, play at making radio for a living, and there's, they're not a huge amount of people that get.
You've just frozen, mate. So it must be great, with a bio like that, senior content, producer and non-league radio show presenter at Three Counties Radio. That's some bio.
Yeah, it basically means I get to muck around and make radio all day, which is brilliant. I produce our breakfast show on BBC Three Counties Radio. So yeah, Monday through to Friday, 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. is when I'm on air. So it means a alarm clock going off just after 4, which in the winter months is yeah, a little bit harder work when you're waking up in the dark and defrosting the car at 4:20 in the morning. But it's great fun. Get to make radio and of course get to do my non-league show as well. So yeah, wouldn't change it for the world.
And when that baby turns up, you'll be up anyway.
Yeah, it's gonna go one or two, right? That I think it will work out because I'll be used to it, or it'll be an extra thing keeping me awake. I suspect it'll be an extra thing keeping me awake and disrupting any sort of sleep schedule that I might have, but yeah, all part of the fun.
With this sort of crazy world of football, non-league football, we'll go back to the very beginning. How did it all start for you? Was you sort of playing the game yourself, or was you always sort of just somebody that was interested in it? How did it all sort of start off for you?
Yeah, I played youth football. I'm a terrible athlete. I'm a terrible sportsman. I love sport. Any sport I try to do, really not that technically talented. Like I was reasonable youth footballer. Played. I was playing at school. Played for local clubs: Wendover Juniors, Aston Clinton Colts, Bedgrove Dynamos. Local teams like that. Was a sort of normally a right winger or a right back without any pace and any crossing ability. But because I spent so much time watching football, watching non-league football, watching football on the telly, I've always felt like I at least know what I'm doing on a football field, even if I can't do it. So I think that gave me something, that meant that I was manageable. Managers quite like me because at least I stood in the right place and tried to do the right things, even if technically wasn't great. I mean, had moments, scored, a winner in extra time once in a cup game, very occasional moments, but not a great footballer now. Reduced to five a side, seven a side on an AstroTurf, and that's about the extent of it. Did have one disastrous 20-minute cameo in a charity match at Amersham Town last year, and yeah, I think was responsible for 3 goals and a 4-3 defeat. So that was the end of my 11 a side dream, age 35. So yeah, always played football growing up, kicking the ball in the playground, all that sort of stuff, and watching non-league football as well. I used to go down Aylesbury United back when the club was based in the town with my dad and with granddad sometimes. This is going back to end of 1995 season, I think the first game I ever saw was the last game of the season. An already promoted Hayes beating Aylesbury 3-1. Aylesbury United had been 1-0 up, I think, to about the last 3 or 4 minutes, and I remember thinking, oh, this is good. Team are winning, I'm enjoying this. And then, of course, football does what football does to you, and they conceded three in the last few minutes and lost 3-1. And that sort of set the tone, I think, for football supporting for the rest of my life thus far.
Was that the sort of like the sort of the catchment for you to carry on going back to non-league football? Was there a moment in that game then that sort of gripped you? Because I've said through the series is, my first experience of it was Harlow against Enfield Town, and remember the goalie at Enfield Town, sorry, the goalkeeper at Harlow Town saving a pinpoint header, and he was sort of 6.5 foot, 7 foot tall, the keeper at Harlow. He was going to his left, dived to his right. How he managed to do it, I have no idea, and tipped it around the post. And from that minute onwards, I was completely gripped. And that was the year sort of Enfield Town went up from step three, step four as well. And that sort of gripped me. And from that minute onwards, the excitement of going there every week was not, has been non-stop for the last, what, 14 odd years.
Yeah, I think, I think it was as much the excitement of going to the game as what was actually happening on the pitch. I think, as a kid, I'm sure it's still the case, right? It's spending time with your family, your mum or dad, whoever's taking you. Part of it is that, part of it's going to something where there's a lot of people, it feels exciting, get some chips before the match, can of coke at half time, or the mascot. If there's a bit of an atmosphere around the non-league game, almost whatever happens on the pitch is an added bonus, I think. It was the event of on a Saturday, and then when I got a bit older on a Tuesday night under the lights, going to a game and all the excitement around that was almost as exciting as the moments on the pitch. And then as I got older, the club at various points had a decent team on the pitch. And I remember, FA Trophy runs, the semi, things like that, FA Cup run. The club had a few decent FA Cup runs in the 90s. Remember those bits. But I think even if they'd lost 1-0 most weeks, I'd have really enjoyed it as well. The moment spending time with my dad and my granddad, and that was as much part of it as actually what was happening on the pitch.
I mean that sort of first, when you say that was almost at the end of the season, that sort of first visit down to Aylesbury. I mean, after that, I mean, what was the next season? I mean, so what sort of memories have you got of that, of the season after?
I think a big part of it was Euro 96, actually, in my memory, was cementing that love for football and that lovely long hot summer. At least it, I remember it as that, and England doing really well and ultimately going out on penalties in the semi-final. But I remember, watching the Spain game and being really into it, and everyone at school was really into it. And I think that helps cement my love for football as well. So, physically going to games, but that summer where everyone was really into football, and we've seen it over recent years as well. And hopefully new generations of football fans will have been caught up in the World Cup and the Euros recently. So I remember that, and then the sort of following couple of seasons with the likes of Gary Crawshaw, play Aylesbury United, former Stevenage striker who was there, and Cliff Hercules seeing the end of his career. And then it all went a bit wrong for the club, to be honest. It lost the ground, relegated a couple of times, and it's still a club I follow, but a club that are doing really well to tread water and still exist, in all honesty, over at Chesham now, and badly need a sort of a route back to the town. It's never quite felt the same as those early couple of seasons where, getting 1,000+ at home, on a bad day, you think this crowd's not below 1,000. That's the core support, and that atmosphere, that tight atmosphere of loads of people in one place, really added to something. It's a shame that at the moment the club can't find a way to play back in the town, because in that ground is now being demolished for housing. I think that was a big part of it, was the kind of atmosphere and the fact that it felt town centre. You could park in the town, you could walk to it, you walk past all the pubs, and whilst I wasn't going in too young, you'd see all the fans outside and all the shirts. And it's been a long time, I think, since I've walked across Aylesbury town centre and seen anyone wearing an Aylesbury United shirt, and that used to feel quite normal.
I mean, with that, was it any games though during that season that stood out for you?
Yeah, plenty. The FA Trophy run, there was good FA Trophy wins within that. The FA Cup runs as well. Getting through to the FA Trophy semi-final, two legs against Bursko, and missing out narrowly by a goal. Going through to what would have been, it wasn't played at Wembley then, but still the first significant cup final for club's career. That was a real. Felt like a real standout moment. FA Cup run as well, through to the first round, and Port Vale, and hitting the woodwork in the first half before ultimately losing 3-0. But yeah, Port Vale running them close in the first half. That some there's, I think there's many things more exciting in the world of non-league than watching a club being drawn out of the hat in that first round, and the chance of getting a league side and going away to a league side. I know the FA Cup might have lost something in the latter stages, but still that excitement of you're following a non-league club and getting to play a league club or going to a league ground and getting to, you know, make some noise and support that club is really exciting. So yeah, definitely that game against Port Vale and those cup runs are really exciting.
Sitting around the radio waiting for in them days, I suppose, as well, when it radio or TV, because it used to be on there and waiting to see a bit like the FA Trophy and FA Bars sort of draws now.
Yeah, and the old CFAX teletext days, right? Where the best way of getting the old Doc Martin and the old, you know, Southern League website, you have to wait for it to scroll across 6 pages and try
Brilliant.
and hit stop and getting the results that way, or even waiting. I remember coming back from holiday in France and like trying to pick up a paper on the ferry to see what happened in the first 3 or 4 games of the season, because there's no way of otherwise picking it up and finding out how that team got on. You know, we're spoiled now, aren't we, with X and club websites and highlight shows and all that sort of stuff. It's all far too easy.
Yeah, it just reminds me of the old days of, as you just said, they're sitting there waiting for it to come right round to the page that you wanted on the sports part of it on CFAX to get it. And then if you looked away for 5 seconds, you'd gone and you've got to sit there and wait another 10 minutes for it to come back round again. But I mean, did you, in the end, did you sort of, you know, because you're in the, you know, sort of media, and as I said, I know you didn't like, you didn't think that was right, but you are the David Ornstein of non-league football when it comes to it. And I mean, especially in this local area, I mean, did you get into media side of it at Aylesbury? Did you start doing stuff for Aylesbury then once you sort of had been there for a couple of years, maybe?
No, so sort of all a bit sort of backwards, really. So I was just a football fan, went off to university, studied history at university because it was sort of my least worst subject at school. You know, it was the one that I could tolerate most and at times found an interest for, not a passion for. Probably a bit of an error. Certainly now with the cost of going to university, I don't think I could justify going to university to do something almost for the sake of it, if I'm honest. Don't tell, you know, parents, but always for the sake of it. But I got heavily involved in student radio when I was there. I loved that. That was so much fun. And in the end, stayed on, did like a fourth year of university and a master's, just partly so I could stay on and do more student radio. And then at the end of that degree, there isn't necessarily a huge amount you can do plenty with a history degree, but none of it necessarily appealed to me. But student radio I loved, so I thought, how can I blag my way into working in radio and doing this for a living? So did what you got to do and fired off emails to, I think, 100. I have a spreadsheet at one point, I think 170 different radio stations. But you wouldn't believe the, well, sadly there aren't now, but you wouldn't believe there are even 170 radio stations in the country. You know, fired off an email to all of them, CV, here's a radio demo, can I have a job, can I have some work experience? And got my foot in the door in a couple of places. I say work for Mix 96 in Aylesbury. I wore the mascot suit at an event, so it was about as tenuously linked to actual radio as you know you can imagine. Used to wear this old mascot suit that hadn't been worn since the mid hadn't been washed since about the mid-90s. Used to smell like old Goldie gloves. Used to go out to events and you had to get led around because you, like most mascot suits, you know, visibility is incredibly poor. Used to, for £10 an hour, used to go out to events and try and wave vaguely in the direction of people. Then did a bit of actual sort of voxes, recording people, radio for them, and eventually managed to force my way in at BBC Three Counties Radio to a 4 week work experience placement, and made enough cups of tea and made myself as useful as possible to pick up a few shifts from there. Then ended up working there as a producer, which is pretty much what I am now, but got really into the non-league side of things, or got back into the non-league side of things there. And felt there was a bit of a niche in the station. You know, the station's very blessed in having Watford, Luton, Wickham, Stevenage, MK Dons to cover and worry about with, you know, a small sports team. So that's such a priority that actually somebody that wants to, you know, do a match report from Chesham United or Tring Athletic, they were pretty grateful to receive that. I wasn't really treading on any toes. And then we had a big old restructure and reshuffle of programming, and somebody said, "Oh, do you fancy doing an hour about non-league?" And that was 7, 8 years ago now, and stuck around, and it's moved time slots and changed a lot since then. But yeah, that's how the non-league show was born, and the sort of social media stuff and reporting alongside that has kind of gone hand in hand with that, really.
I mean, with it though, I mean, you've had some sort of like, I assume you had some, you know, some good guests on there and some really sort of high value guests as well. I mean, what's been your favourite once you've got into sort of, I suppose, especially into Three Counties Radio? I mean, what's been your favourite sort of chats that you've had with people?
It's been some really Really good ones. That's a really good guess. To be honest, I love those chats with, non-league players that have played around the game for a long time, coming in and chatted. You sort of Greg Williams, Lee Burcham, people like that, Matt Timberlake, people like that come in, sort of local football names that are not, maybe not, I mean, they won't thank you saying, maybe not, international household names, but people like that have come in and done chats. And then during the pandemic, obviously we all had a bit more time on our hands, and those chats with the sort of bosses running the National League and involved in the FA and things like that, I found really interesting. I did enjoy those sort of hold to account interviews, as we'd call them, right? During that really difficult time where football had to stop and change, and I think whatever the rule makers decided we were going to be frustrated with, those kind of hold to accounts with Anthony Hughes, Mark Ives, people like that kind of, why have you decided that? Why have you changed that? Why have you scrapped replays? Was there not a better way to end the season? All of those were great fun, and there was a really keen audience for those at that time, because we were all sat around frustrated, weren't we, that football had been paused.
You figures went through the roof.
Yeah, again, because it's not like outside, was there? But I'll tell you what, I love covering non-league. I'd recommend it for anyone, even if maybe your passion isn't totally in non-league. If you want to work in the media and you want to cover Man United or Arsenal or whatever, the chances of you getting that kind of one-to-one time to interview, the chairman of a Premier League club or the manager is really, really difficult. If you choose to cover Biggleswade FC for a bit, chances are you can have a chat with the chairman, the players, and that accessibility with non-league is something I've always loved, and especially during that time, the times in an evening where a football chairman of a National League club that I've never spoken to before would just give me a call and we'd chat for half an hour about what was going on and what they'd heard and what they thought was. Yeah, that was great fun. That kind of access in non-league, I think, is something that makes it brilliant.
But how's your, I suppose there's two people, I suppose, for me that you talk when you start talking about non-league football, and they, especially radio wise, that come to mind is yourself and Tony and Chenzo. But you've got sort of one that doesn't want to talk to you and one that does. So I mean, with yourself, is it a situation, with it now that you can got to a stage where you can call somebody now and your name means something now, that people go, oh, it's Ollie. We're gonna definitely gonna talk to Ollie.
Sometimes not, right? It depends. Ultimately, it depends what you want to talk to them about. It's generally the case. If it's something they want to talk to you about, they will. Otherwise, they won't. I think that's the case all across the media. I think Tony Chenzo is brilliant. Tony Chenzo watches, a load more football than I do. He's been to loads more grounds than I do. He's been in the game a lot longer. He does something slightly different in the world of non-league, but. Met paths across lots of times, getting really well with Tony.
But your name's got to be up there now with Tony, isn't it? Surely. I mean, if Tony phones somebody up and wants an interview, they're going to do it straight away, aren't they? And surely it's got to be the same with you now as well, isn't it?
Sometimes, yeah, it depends what you want to talk to about. If I want to talk to someone from the FA about, I don't know, scrapping FA Cup replays or government's plan to introduce a football regulator, no chance. They're not going to let me, anywhere near that until it works for them, until it's the right moment for them. National League, if it works for them, the time works for them, they've got something to talk about, they'll do it. Thankfully, doing the show I do most of the time, is a good excuse to talk to clubs that are doing well, to talk to managers after big results, because it makes for better listening. It's dull. Well, it's not as exciting talking to a manager after a nil-nil draw, right? Or after they've lost 1-0, but a crowd wins 11-0, you want to talk to them. So it's normally a pretty easy sell, if I'm honest. But that's something that I love about doing that show, something I love about the world of non-league football. And you must get it as well, right? You fire off that text, and more often than not, people say, yeah, sure, of course. If they've got the time, everyone's busy, but if they've got 5, 10 minutes over the phone, most people give you the time of day. And certainly the radio show I do wouldn't work if people didn't. It's pretty rare that I have to send more than 4 texts or make more than 4 calls to book 4 guests. It's pretty rare that, it's only if people are genuinely doing something else, or sometimes I've tried to book people literally mid-match, or, can you speak to me at 10 to 7 on Monday night? Well, we're kicking off at 7:30, so possibly not. Oh yeah, of course. But if they're available, Or they haven't already been sacked. That's happened a couple of times where I've, yeah. Because it's
Come
not
on
always, you know,
in. Who's
you're
the
sort
people? Who? Come on in. You've got
of.
to do that. You've actually had that. I mean, I've had it where I'll be honest. I've had the same situation where you phone them up and say to them, "Oh, you want to come on the show?" And by the time they come on the show the following Monday, they ever had the sack. That's happened a couple of times. I'll be honest. And they just come on and then that gets a little bit. I don't know about you. Something like that happens. You just think, "Well, this could be a really good interview."
Yeah, normally you try and keep that booking, right? Normally, even better. And I've done that. Those are great. I've done those. I remember where it really kicked off at Wellington City. I'm gonna misremember this, so apologies if I do. Adam Fisher leaving Wellington City, and the club fell out with him, and I think at one point they couldn't get back into their own social media account because someone had a new run. You know, one of those kind of slightly messy situations, and they ended up interviewing outgoing manager plus incoming manager almost at the same time, and getting two versions of events, and that's always great fun. You get a bit of controversy in non-league football like that. But yeah, I definitely text the, you know, who I thought was the current manager of Homer Green to find out that he'd left the club a week and a half or, you know, a month and a half ago, and you know. Normally, they're gracious enough to say, "I'm not actually in charge now, but here's the number of the guy who now is, you know, who lost the job," because that's not only football. I've done that more than once.
But I suppose, do you ever get to a stage where there's something happening in non-league football, but maybe Three Counties Radio is outside of that remit, and you're just sitting, and you always want to punch yourself because you want to get that person on your show because you know it'll make a great interview, but you know you can't touch it, or you won't touch it because it's outside the remit for your actual radio show.
Yeah, all the time. So I meddle in things that I probably shouldn't, right? That are beyond Ben's hearts and bucks, especially if there's national interest, if it's leagues and things like that. Absolutely, I'll kind of meddle and get involved. And the BBC works quite well together. So every now and then I get a message from, you know, a football club, you know, Gosport Borough or whatever, ping me a message to, you know, Gainsborough Trinity, you know, and I can kind of forward it on to a relevant person in the sports department of that club. Yeah, there are times where someone approaches you with, you know, a dynamite story that you can't, it's not in your patch, and it's too involved to kind of skim the surface of and just put out something on social media. You know, you can kind of, I like to keep an eye on what's going on elsewhere, and if something is fairly straightforward, not too controversial, and, you know, involving a club somewhere else, then I'll share it. But one of those where it's like you really want to get into it, but it's just outside of the scope, and yeah, you can't really get involved in meddling. It does happen from absolutely does happen from time to time, yeah. And it's, but there's other people elsewhere in the BBC. There's 39 different BBC local radio stations, so there's always an authority. There's always somebody that's covering it that you can kind of hand it over to, and they'll do a good job of it.
I mean, with that, I've done sort of interviews that have turned out to be sort of. What you look in it and you think, do you know what, this one could be hard going and it ends up being really easy going. There's other ones where you get to it and you think this is going to be really easy going and it's like trying to get blood out of a stone. But it's also those ones as well where you get something really, really funny happened during that interview. And there's a very famous one that we had when we were on the radio at the time. But I mean, is there one that you've had as well where something funny's really happened? Maybe if they're at a game when you're talking to them, or something really, really funny sort of actually happened in the background when you've interviewed someone?
I did a report once from Royston Town. It was from Garden Walk, Royston Town, FA Cup. And you know, you try and busy ground. It was FA Cup. It was the, I think, fourth qualifying round. And you're obviously half time, right? I'm gonna phone in this report, talk to them live. You try and find yourself a little bit of space. So I went to sort of the side around the, almost not quite around the back of the stand, but to the side of the stand, and I was phoning this report, and then looked to my right and just a gentleman having a wee in the bush right next to me. And I'm thinking, they don't have to part with that much of the day, you know. It's like, do you mind? I'm trying to give half time for it. Yeah, so plenty of times that way around. Yeah, you obviously have guests. I mean, general radio, not that long ago, lovely weather reader, Elizabeth Rizzini, was doing giving us a weather update, and a mouse ran across her mixing desk, which, you know, the absolute pro she was. Little scream, mentioned it, and then cracked on, and, you know, told us it was going to be changeable for the next 2 days and higher 14 degrees. But yeah, it happens. Happens. There's nothing better than live radio or live TV, right? Where anything can happen.
Well, I think I don't know if I've even said it to you before. You might have heard it. I don't know. We've said it a couple of times on the show. I think we were interviewing, he's no longer with us, unfortunately, passed away, but the chairman of Crawley Down Gatwick, and we were interviewing him, and we were under the stairs, as we used to call it, in on the radio for Hawks Radio, internet radio, and me and a colleague who was doing a show with me at that time, and we were interviewing him, and beforehand he texts me to say, "Dave, look, I'll come on still," he says, "but there's an issue." I said, "What's the matter, mate?" He went, "I'm actually going to be on the burger bar for the under 18s game tonight." So I went, "Right, okay, that's all right, don't worry about it, just come on anyway and promote what you need to promote." So he said, "Oh, great, thanks." And he comes on and we're talking away, and really lovely guy. And then all of a sudden he says, "Dave, can you just give me 2 seconds?" And he must have put his phone down on the side, and all you hear is this bloke in the background going, "Yeah, I'll have 2 cheeseburgers, 3 Bovril's, a cup of tea." And we're sitting falling about laughing in the studio, like, you know what I mean? And just turning around and saying, a bit like you just said there, you don't get this on Match of the Day, do you? Do you know what I mean? It was just literally so funny just to hear this going on. And he comes back, "Sorry about that." "No, not a problem." Said, "Did the bloke get his burger right?" You know, stuff like this. You know, just really, really funny stuff like that. And, you
I
know,
love it. I used to do the non-league shows, moved around the schedule quite a lot. When it was on a Sunday afternoon, lots of managers, lots of players involved in youth football and coaching youth football. The amount of times, normally what at least once, if not twice a week, I'd interview a manager or a player on the sidelines whilst they're coaching or watching one of their kids play a youth football match, and would we're quite regularly kind of, "Sorry, give me a minute, mate," and then would "Close him down, Dave." And then, back to the it's.
but I mean, are you like me? I mean, I get very frustrated with non-league football, in the situation of, you know, as you said, you've been doing it on the radio now for 7 years. I've been doing it for 14 years, sort of radio, and then on social media as well. That there isn't sort of like the main sort of radio stations for the BBC or TV or whatever are not actually taking non-league football more seriously and having a program, you know, somewhere on the sort of the, and I don't mean to say mainstream away from Three Counties, but you know what I'm trying to say, on Radio 5 Live or Talk Sport or somewhere around it, that there isn't anything on there that is mainstream for non-league football.
You're absolutely right. I think the world's moving towards a podcast being that opportunity, and tried a couple of times to get a podcast off the ground at the BBC, and it's difficult. You kind of have to prove there's an audience there. I think there is an audience there. I think the difficulty for stations like 5 Live and Talk Sport, when I was to talk for them, is people dip in and out of radio. People stick the radio on for 15 minutes in the car when they're going somewhere, and they want to be able to hear something familiar, something that, if it's a Sunday evening or a Monday morning, the chance of the majority of football fans, maybe not us, majority of football fans, want to have some chat about what's happening at Man City and Man United. And that the moment where they turn on and it's like, "Well, hang on, what, why are they talking about Tring Athletic?" is probably the moment that, for some football fans, well, the risk is, I guess, that they at that point click over to a different station and maybe don't come back. So that's probably the risk for station editors. But I think it is a shame, and it's a shame that there isn't something somewhere in a schedule that people could listen back to, or that there isn't more purpose-built podcasts, things that are available for people to listen to at their convenience. I think that non-league community really would seek out. There's some excellent non-league podcasts outside of the BBC that are made, and maybe part of the reason that perhaps other stations don't want to touch it is because it's already been done. It's already been done very, very well. Tim Field's podcast is brilliant, but it's a shame. I'd like to see more, and I think the audience is, you've seen from what you do and I've seen from what I do, that I think the audience is there. There is a big audience for it, I feel.
And I see, and I mean, there's weeks, and I don't know about you. I mean, did I not see though at one stage though that your show was sort of, you know, maybe not going to happen anymore? I'm sure that was that happening sort of a year or so ago?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 2 years ago now. Yeah, the BBC, highly talked about, and it's in public domain that it's quite a big restructure of the way local radio worked, and program sharing and amalgamation of different programs, and it looked like there wasn't going to be any room within the sort of new formats of programs and the way program sharing was going to work for it. which was, you know, a real shame, and it was never meant to be a sort of woe is me, it's going sort of moment. But I put out a pretty, you know, I think a fairly kind of neutral statement, really, just thanking people for their involvement, and was relatively at peace with it. If I'm, you know, if I'm honest, I sort of accepted that was going to be the case, and was thinking, okay, can we work to turn this into a podcast? Can we do something a bit different? And then it was a huge, huge reaction to that. And I think that took me by surprise, took everyone by surprise. I'm really thankful for that, the sort of reaction from people that it was going to be going. It's not necessarily because of that changed, but there was a bit of a rethink up and down the country as to sports slots and making sure that local radio could still do its absolute utmost to cover local sport. And yeah, managed to thankfully find a little slot on a Monday evening, 6 until 7, which is where it's been since. And yeah, very grateful for to be able to do it and have it still there. I loved it. It's great fun.
It's a shame, I suppose, in a way, though, isn't it? That, you know, you've got that slot there, 6 till 7. That the rest of the sort of local sort of BBC radio stations don't then look at it and go, "Well, look, hang on a second, this is doing really well. It's getting good viewing figures, etc., etc. Why do we not then open it up and go, Ollie, look, you know, what we want to do is we want to open it up a little bit more, and your show will then go out individually to the others at the same time."
Yeah, I mean, so there are a few. So Northampton, for example, up the road, do one exactly the same time slot. So I guess from a serving the audience point of view, you're better off having lots of different ones covering the area that you live than one trying to cover a bigger patch. But I think one of the challenges of doing that is football doesn't necessarily work county wise. So covering clubs in Beds, Hearts and Bucks is a bit of an arbitrary mix of clubs. Obviously, you know, they're local to one another, so people have a general local interest, but you do end up, you know, there's 7 different leagues that it straddles at step 5 and step 6 alone. You know, you've got outliers of one Hertfordshire club playing the Essex Senior League, which jumbles things up a little bit. League specific, if you were designing it from scratch, maybe to be honest, what you do, you know, league specific stuff, it would make more sense sometimes than kind of juggling and jumping between clubs playing across lots of different divisions. But this season's a little bit better actually, higher up the non-league. You know, we've got 4 clubs in the National League South, none in the National League North. Last season we had Bishop Stortford playing in the National League North. That every club at step 4 is in the Southern Division 1 Central and in the local area, and that pretty much makes up almost the whole league. So it's become a little bit easier, thankfully, for the FA. Last summer, whoever it was designing the allocations were a little bit more favourable to clubs in Beds, Hearts and Bucks. But it's a bit of a mixture.
Thanks, Lawrence Jones, eh?
I
And his team. But
like that. I sat next to him at the awards too, actually, and he promised me an interview. I sort of introduced myself and told him, you know, what I do and everything. And he was like, yeah, okay, you know, I'll do an interview. And I thought, I wonder when it comes down to it in FA press offices, I wonder if that'll actually happen. But yeah, pinged him an email and he was kind enough to give me an interview. So yeah, lot of time for Lawrence.
He's a dynamite man. He really is. I've met him a load of times at the
Good stories.
and sat down with him and listened. And actually, in this series, the show, we've actually had him on for because he's at Harborough Town, as well. We did really well in the FA Cup and flying in their league, so he was on for that as well. So he's just another one like Anthony Hughes. I think they were out of the same sort of mould.
Yeah,
But
much missed, Anthony Hughes.
I mean, with your With it, I mean, big stories over the 7 years. I mean, what would you say is your biggest story? You know, that you've managed to sort of unearth, you know, during it. Because I mean, I get people say to me, you know, I don't believe anything in non-league football unless Ollie Bayliss posts it. So I'll be honest with you, I always look at you first to see whether or not it's true or not. If I see a rumor come up that might, you know, that I know you probably would get hold of. So, you know, so what would you say is your biggest story that you've had yourself?
I'll give you two, I guess. So one back in that frustrating COVID pandemic time, probably, you know, the way the National League had decided it was going to end its season felt like quite a big moment. You know, it was something that football hadn't ever had to deal with. You've got league tables, you've got a season that's 3 quarters finished, and what do you do? Because you can't physically play football, how do you decide it? And the, you know, the decision making process and this is how we're going to do it in the National League, making that decision was something that got a lot of interaction, a lot of eyes on it, reporting that one. One of the others that got a lot of reaction was the FA and the moment they decided to sort of clamp down on, was, to be honest, pre-existing rules that they hadn't really clamped down on in terms of ground grading. So a local club to us, Aylesbury Vale Dynamo, that had played at Step 4 quite happily for years and years and years. And the FA, over the course of a season, said, you know what, your changing room, your referee's changing room, to be precise, isn't the right size. We're going to relegate you because of that. And that, you know, that moment of sort of football bureaucracy, whether you see it as right or wrong, but that moment that the FA wrote to the club and said, yeah, your referee's changing room is a metre too small, so we're going to relegate you at the end of the season. That story got a lot of reaction.
I mean, with the COVID, and I know they're in your sort of area, because I think he's been on his show a few times, and of course I talk to him every Sunday night. Of course, the rogue himself, Mr. Paul Halsey. I mean, did you get to interview him around the very first one? I mean, if you did, I bet that was quite colourful conversation.
Yeah, Paul's been on the show, countless times. You know, he's always. Always a good character, always gives you an honest interview, does Paul. Yeah, Paul's been on the show plenty of times.
I mean, what was that conversation? Because he still goes on about it now every Sunday. I should have got promoted. So, I mean, what when you get that conversation with somebody like that, that must have been as angry as he was at the time. Well, I know he was, because I was talking to him at the time, but as angry as he was at the time, how does that go when you're in an interview with somebody like that?
Yeah, they really were one of the victims, weren't they, of that season, the way it ended, given that the club hasn't been able to go up to step three since. You know, plenty of other clubs have moved on and fortunes have changed, and it's you know, become somewhat forgotten, I think. But that was the season, wasn't it, that where we're going to go up and didn't, and haven't been able to since. Poor Risborough Rangers up the road as well, they've gone unbeaten, and, you know, we're having the best season they'd ever had. It'd gone totally unbeaten that season and had already mathematically secured promotion. I think them and Jersey Bulls were the two clubs that already mathematically, you know, they'd already celebrated promotion. They'd already won promotion. It wasn't a case of how you were going to decide their season. As far as they were concerned, they'd popped the champagne and had done it.
I think Vauxhall Motors was the other one as well. When it was in there, Vauxhall Motors as well, up north as well, that were either promoted or needed a point or something on those sort of lines to go as well. I know it was two or three of them. But
yeah, it was incredibly harsh on clubs like that, and to expunge that word they used. You know, expunge that record and remove the record for clubs that had, you know, gone unbeaten all season and had a remarkable season. And then they sort of unexpunged it the following year, didn't we? We got a handful of games played the following year and actually had the two together. It felt like it was about a season. So then they merged the two seasons and promoted some clubs, didn't relegate others. And in the end, some clubs sort of got what they deserved or felt happy about it. But it was all a mess, wasn't it? It was all an absolute mess that season. I don't envy the people making the football decisions. I'm not sure they were always the right decisions, but I wouldn't have also wanted to be running those leagues or in those meetings and dealing with chairman and club with no football to play and nothing to focus on apart from that decision-making process. I think that meant everything snowballed. You had a lot of chairmen, especially National League North and South. You know, you've got a lot of chairmen there, a lot of big characters that are outspoken and heavily involved in their clubs. And those moments where they didn't know the game on Tuesday night or Saturday to focus on, and, you know, all they were focusing on is how these decisions were made and voting patterns. And I think any of us knew how, you know, the voting system in the National League, National League North and South worked until that year. And then, you know, it became the big issue that the clubs in the North and South didn't have anywhere near as much power as perhaps they should. And it's led to a few reforms and a few ways that football now runs differently, which is a positive. And I suppose ultimately as well has partly led to the, you know, government policy changing and the possible introduction of the football governance bill.
I mean, what has been your, I suppose, through the years, I mean, when you've been watching football and then, you know, in different guises, I mean, have you got a sort of a match or a couple of matches that sort of stick out for you that, you know, you sort of remember, you know, fondly for one reason or another?
As a football commentator, so as part of what I do and what I've done at BBC Three Counties Radio, commentating on football. So, you know, some football league games, but the non-league games have been brilliant. Covering Boreham Wood very closely, the season they got to playoff final was brilliant. You know, going to going to Wembley as a football commentator and commentating on a game, no matter what level. Been lucky enough to do that three times now. Boreham Wood against Tranmere in that playoff final where, to be honest, Boreham Wood should have won. Tranmere reduced to 10 men early on, and Boreham Wood didn't really turn up that day in the way that they should have done. But that was a brilliant experience. I think I was on my 29th. It was definitely my birthday, 28th, 29th birthday. That was brilliant. Favourite is probably watching, following Newport Pagnell Town doing commentary on them winning the FA Vars. Yeah, that was a brilliant day. Go to Wembley in a club that I'd reported on, you know, normally in front of 150 fans, and suddenly his 7,000 fans and members of the community, and you get on a train that's suddenly full of green shirts and people, and you're thinking, I don't know where you are normally on a Tuesday night against Northampton Owenchenix or whoever in the league. This is brilliant. That was great. I love the FA Trophy for that. I think even more so than, sorry, the FA Vars, even more so than the FA Trophy. You know, you got those clubs in step five where it's like, it's the biggest day of their lives. And then bizarrely, they managed to repeat it the following year, didn't win. But yeah, doing those three Wembley commentaries, I think were, three sort of career highlights and yeah, real moments. That was brilliant.
Do you still go to the non-league day? I mean, do you still get along to it? And, you know, you've got to be Royal Box, isn't it? Surely.
I've been to the last few National League Player Finals as well, always good days out. I was surprised how non-league finals day, how few fans watch both. They put them together, and I think like that. I think it works, but if you've been there, you might have a handful of fans that stick around if their club has won the Vars to watch a bit of the trophy, but I think next to no fans turn up early for the trophy to watch the Vars, and it's a bit of a weird one that it feels like it doesn't work in that sense. I don't know how you do it differently. I also don't think it makes sense necessarily to do them on separate days. So I don't know what the answer is, but the first non-league finals day I went to, I was surprised by that. It doesn't feel like that massively changes. You know, I suppose it's easier for the FA in terms of security and things like that, and you know, having the stadium available for a day, it makes sense. It probably cuts costs in that sense and makes tickets more affordable and works in that sense. But yeah, we're surprised by that. You know, you get a combined attendance of 34,000, but there's no point where even close to that we'll be in the same at the same time. But it is a great day. It is a great occasion, as are those National League playoff final games as well. You know, where playoff finals are great because it means so much. You know, it's a chance to become a football league club for the first time in history to go up. It's a massive moment for clubs, isn't it? And those decided on, you know, a slip or a penalty or one moment, an incredible atmosphere.
I think this year's Vars final, though, I think that'll always be my memory because I was lucky enough to go and do the press for Romford. So I was really pleased with that, you know. So that will always, you know, sitting in the Royal Box and stuff like that and getting to go on the pitch. And I think the weirdest thing about it always, I think the week after was the case of sitting there watching the FA Cup final and seeing the accreditation that Alex Ferguson has got was the same one that I'd got sitting on my desk. You know what I mean? It was just incredible. That sort of thing, it was just incredible. But would you say one of the biggest bits of news that you've had of recent years is, you know, literally, I see, you know, you've done an interview with him yourself, is this proposed merger between Real Bedford and Bedford Town?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. I mean, Real Bedford is a massive story, and I think, you know, it was treated with a bit of scepticism, I'd say, a couple of years ago. Peter McCormack, big figure in the world of podcasting and Bitcoin, from Bedford, decided to buy what was then Bedford FC, who were, you know, with respect to them, a small club, 30 odd supporters playing in Step Six, taking over this club, and we're all sort of thinking, well, what's the plan here? And then within a few months of skull and crossbones on the crest and all the kind of pirate insignia and change them to be called Real Bedford. And it's you know, and talking about, I'm going to take over this club and get them into the Premier League or, you know, at the very least the Football League. And you think, right, OK, we've sort of seen this before in non-league, haven't we? Chairman comes in, takes over the club, and within 6 months it hasn't worked, they're bored, they've moved on. It happens, and you think this is more likely to end in disaster than anything else. But credit to them, they've stuck at it and appear to have done it the right way in terms of, yes, they invested in the player squad, definitely have, but also invested in the women's side. The women's side are doing really well in the fourth tier and ambitions to get that To get promotion this season and try and get up to the second tier of women's football, and put money into infrastructure a little bit. And now the investment is talking £4-5 million from the Ross twins, who are the two guys that, if you've ever seen the film The Social Network, make the argument that they created Facebook and tried to sue Mark Zuckerberg, and that's them. And very, very wealthy individuals, billionaires, I believe, and have put money into the club. So a couple of years later, a couple of back-to-back promotions for Real Bedford, and they're looking to buy and merge Bedford Town. Looks like it's a proposal that Bedford Town and their chairman are going with. So the plan is over the summer to merge those two clubs and try and create one club in Bedford that's going to, their aim is go up through the leagues. And to be honest, be surprised if they don't. The backing and support and money they've got, if some of those fans go on the journey from Bedford Town as well. Whether they hit a level, and you see it with the Salford project, you see it so often that eventually you get to a point where it's hard to keep moving up and the momentum stops. I don't know what that ceiling will be, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're a National League South club within a few years. Whether that ambition of getting a Premier League club is realised, I don't know. But it's a big old place, Bedford.
Yeah. But will you be sort of like going through the rule book as well in the next few weeks? Because at the minute, Bedford Town are sitting top of step three. Real Bedford are sitting top of step four. So are you going to start going through the rule book to get there as quick as you can to get the answer? Because, of course, everybody's going to be saying, well, what's going to happen? I mean, I'm under the understanding that if it happens, they'll stay at step three. But, I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
I think it's worse than that, even. The rules, as I understand them, say that if you merge two clubs, you have to compete at the level that the lowest club was in the season before. So if you've got Real Bedford currently in step four, Bedford Town in step three, even though both are currently top of their respective leagues and have a good chance of promotion, in theory, as the rules kind of state it, and as Peter McCormack, the Real Bedford chairman, believes they state it as well, the two clubs merged, they'd have to play back again at step four. They, I believe, are going to make an argument to the FA that, probably rightly, actually, in my opinion, that if Real Bedford were to get promoted on the pitch, then it probably feels right that they play at step three next season. And actually, the space as well, that you wouldn't necessarily be taking someone else's place. The resignations mean that there is space in the pyramid to do that. So I think that's the argument they're going to make. But I think by the letter of the law, they have to merge back at step four again. And not sure I'd want to be in their division next season if they do, if I'm honest. I think most of those clubs, I'm sure Paul Housley will tell you that he'd rather they weren't in their division next season than everyone else.
I mean, by the time this goes out, we'll probably know the answer. But the fact that the I suppose the funniest thing about it all would be is like that would then cause chaos with the promotion in step three. Yeah, so in step four on the Southern League Central, because you've got Biggles Wade up there and you've got three other clubs in the playoffs. Well, if they can't go up, does that mean Biggleswade? Does that mean Burke Hampstead go up? Does that then mean that the sixth place team then becomes the fifth place team in the playoffs? So there's a lot to. Lot of issues, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. And you really hope they can make a decision and communicate all of that before the end of the season. I think one of the times Donny Football lets itself down is when fans don't know what's happening at the end of the season, what a club needs to stay up. And there's some brilliant work done by fans with spreadsheets and things like that, right? Working out reprieves and things like that. And to a point, I guess, relegation, you're always going to have a bit of that. You're always going to have moments where, step six relegation or something like that. You need that sort of points per game and that working out reprieves. But higher up the pyramid and with promotions, you really want to know what's happening before the end of the season. We had a case with Wellington City a year or two ago where they mathematically got in the playoffs and weren't allowed to play in the playoffs. Do you remember the Super Playoffs a few years ago where you had clubs that had to compete in a playoffs against other clubs in other leagues, but couldn't actually get promoted if they had a lower points per game and classical situations like that. Now that we've got pretty close to the perfect pyramid in non-league and things are a lot simpler, you really want issues like that decided as early as possible, because then you get that excitement at the end of the season and the club in seventh has the chance to go up to sixth on the last day, thinks actually sixth is a playoff spot now because the team at the top are going up automatically and it's all changed. you know, you want to know what's happening on the pitch. You want that excitement. You don't want this, oh, we're not really sure what it means, and are we going to get reprieved? Are we going to get automatically promoted, no matter what happens? So you'd hope decisions can be reached early and communicated to fans in that regard.
I mean, that Wellington City season was like the okey-cokey. You never knew who was going to be playing in the playoffs from 1 minute to the next, from one week to... It was them North Lee constantly, wasn't it? And it was just, as you say, it was just a complete nightmare. But for Ollie, I mean, what's the future for yourself? I mean, you know, is it, you know, you just said you're doing a breakfast show and doing your show as well. I mean, is it going then sort of like, is your aim then to get to sort of like into Radio 5 Live or Talk Sport or Sky Sports, BBC itself? I mean, what's the aim for yourself?
You know what? Boring answer, but I love what I do. So I've done quite a bit with BBC Sport over the last few years, and it's all very much joined together. It used more of an outpost than it was in local radio. Now, you know, no one could afford it to be, really. So Real Bedford's an example of a story or something we've been covering, but you know, BBC Sport send me a message on what's happening. Are you going to this? Are you doing that? And you have the opportunity to, you know, get stuff on BBC Sport and cover it from wherever you're based in the BBC. Immediate focus, to be honest, is having a baby in a couple of months and seeing how much time I've left for non-league football aside from that. Taking her to her first game, hopefully, you know, age whatever, 2 months, season friendly, and dragging her along. You know, she's got much choice in the matter, but still trying to get out and watch football. I think it'd be interesting to see the way local radio go. You know, we're all working very hard to justify our own existence, like it feels like in the world of local radio, in a lot of senses. You know, there's a lot of eyes on the way that local radio has changed and audiences and a talk of, you know, increasing digital audience, which is there, but there's still a big community that listen to local radio, and we're working very hard to serve them. So yeah, who knows, to be honest. I always think if you're doing something fun, something you enjoy, then, you know, and you make something of a living out of it, then that's the way forward. So plan at the moment is to crack on and do what I'm doing, if I'm honest. Boring answer, but that's the case.
Well, listen, mate, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it. It's been fantastic having you on and having a chat to us about your life in football. So really, really appreciate that. Stay with us. I'll talk to you afterwards. But, you know, a massive thank you. And wish you all the best with the baby and all the best with your breakfast show. And, of course, also with a non-league show as well. But from me, a massive thank you to Ollie. And we'll be back again for another edition of My Life in Football very, very soon.